Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. I am very excited about this next guest because I think she's going to be able to teach me quite a bit about storytelling, about writing, and potentially about women. So it is an honor to have our next guest, which beats me when it comes to books. I have 18, I think, somewhere in there that I wrote, but this one has 150 titles to her name. So it is an honor to have Renee Rose on the Million Dollar Stories podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start off with number one. The book that we're really talking about is Right to Riches. Okay.
Yes.
And I love how you break it down. It starts off with the story of Cha-Ching. I'm a million-dollar author. Is that what was the genesis of that book of, wow, you know what? I became a successful writer. So now let me just turn around and help people get to where I'm at now.
It was the genesis was actually being invited to lead a little roundtable on abundance mindset at Romance Author Mastermind several years ago. And because I've always been, I have this woo-woo side that loves, energy work, abundance mindset, law of attraction. And then I had my like author side, and they didn't really mix until I was invited, and I was like, oh, I guess I have something to share here. And so after that, like, I started a Facebook group, and then I was like, I think there's a book here.
Yes.
So that's how
it starts with the mind of it, believing it's possible. And that is the law of attraction, having the abundance mindset and
yes, like setting a clear intention and clearing out your, imposter syndrome, your comparisonitis, that kind of the stuff that'll slow you down.
And so maybe if you could take us back to the very beginning, before you had 150 titles, who were you? Were you just an avid reader / writer? And then you said, hey, why don't I start creating romance books that I would read?
Yes. So I was actually, I got my degree in creative writing, and we were not allowed to write genre fiction where romance falls in genre fiction. It had to be like literary fiction. And so then, I went on to get a very boring job as a technical writer, engineering firm, blah, blah, blah. And then a friend gave me a romance novel for a plane ride. This is before Kindles, so handed me a paperback. And she was like a really intelligent, thoughtful friend. And so I was like, wait, you read romance? Because, school had conditioned me to think like, stupid people. Like, they were so snobby about it that I was like, oh, I can't read that. And she was like, oh, just try it. You're going to like it. Oh, I loved it. Like, I was like, this is my jam, I'm like hot. I don't know what I could say on.
Yeah, oh, you can say anything on this.
Okay,
podcast.
Good. I'm like hot sex, romance, and then just like the happily ever after appealed to my like little law of attraction loving heart. Cause it's not creative fiction is life sucks and you learn something. Well, that sucks. that's not that fun. So, that's life, right? So I'd rather dwell in the hot sex and happily ever afters area.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Number one, kids do not learn about these type of books in school. So that's probably why they don't ever pick them up. But also you're right about the whole nonfiction. You learn so much about the world. You start to realize how corrupt and evil it really is. And that could be a downfall. But when you look at these books, it is all about spiking all kinds of dopamine in the brain and just, creating mystery. And I was just talking to a girl recently and I said, I'm a nonfiction maniac. She's like, I just love mystery and figuring out what's going on, what's going to happen. And curiosity, spikes in my brain. And I'm thinking to myself, I've realized after interviewing hundreds of entrepreneurs, men most likely are drawn to personal development nonfiction. Women are drawn to fiction. There's something going on there. So maybe you've come across that same realization.
Yeah. We're clearly just like exploring fantasy. So and I honestly, I think all of us are reading and writing to resolve our own issues. So whether that's nonfiction, right? Like you're like on pursuit of something, right? So I'm pursuing something, through hot sex and happily ever afters, but it's sort of the same, right? We're all just looking for growth, for resolving, healing our deepest wounds, for, moving forward in a way that's peaceful and joyful,
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, I saw 11,600 reviews on one of the books. You probably have more than that on some others, but how did it take off? Can you take us back to when it started to really roll for you? Like when you started to have some momentum behind you?
I definitely do credit my my woo-woo with it, because I think it's like as soon as you believe it. So one thing is like I got started right after 50 Shades of Grey. So I saw like this limitless potential of someone who was just writing fan fiction, sell her books for $99 million. So right away I was like, I'm having that. And my friends laughed at me. It's okay. But so right away I was like, there's potential here, right? There's that is like everyone says, like, you know, if you can sell something on the internet, there's limitless potential because you have access to the billions of people on the planet. And so I did have abundance as a goal right from the beginning of like there's abundance to be made writing hot sack, like just kinky. And kink is my jam. You know, like when I read that and I was like, oh, I could write, you know, I can't tell you how many authors' careers got launched by either Twilight or 50 Shades of Grey because people read it and were like, I could write that.
Dude, my mind is way more into that than this person is. So I can write way more, right? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Or even like it wasn't the great American novel. Like it wasn't, right? Like they're not, you were like some books you read and you cry, you're like, I'll never write that good. Those books made everyone go, I could write that. And I'm not dissing on them. I'm just saying like there's a simplicity and yet a universal fantasy baked into those that made people like both hooked you, but made you feel like you could tell that story better or, you know, whatever it is.
And so storytelling seemed to come natural for you then, right? Or was it basically take your fantasies, put them down on a piece of paper, and that most likely will resonate with people that it's their fantasies also. Is that right?
That's exactly my theory. Is like if I'm excited about something, someone else is going to resonate with it also. And it may not be everybody's cup of tea. And you have to resolve yourself to that. Like, because when you're out there thinking like I want everyone to like my book, you're gonna limit it finding its true readers, right? It's like the people who try to like market to everyone instead of finding their niche.
Yeah,
you know, it's just pull in the ones who are going to love it. That's the way to go, you know?
And you found a tribe early on, it sounds like, and then they couldn't wait for the next book. And it just, picked up momentum and, you know, did publishers come out of the woodwork? They self-published? Tell us
about
that.
I did start with a niche publisher who was in the sort of like kinky romance area. So I did start like small, but like in my little lane that was lucrative. And so right away, like I made like first book, I was making enough to pay a mortgage, you know, like it was good. And then I went indie and I hit, you know, everyone was talking about Kindle Unlimited and rapid release. And so I tried it. And then that was the ticket to getting to six figures. And then I learned Facebook ads and that, you know, got me to high six figures. And then translations got me to seven figures.
Translations is a publishing house?
I hire translators and self-pub
you mean
those as well.
By having it translated into multiple languages, it was a lot, it helped you break seven figures then?
Yeah.
Wow. And which publisher, or were they multiple publishers at this point?
No, all just self-pubbed.
Oh, it's awesome. So I'm a big fan of that. Okay, good deal. Yeah. Very nice. And that's what we recommend, by the way, because you own it, you control it, you could do whatever the heck you want with it. You can write anything you want. Freedom, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think there's sometimes you have that like, oh, it's going to be better with a publisher. In my experience, most people's experience, it's really not, you know. Mm. I think it just comes from that like, oh, I want someone to take care of me. But like, no one knows your business like you. No one knows your books like you.
Wow. Okay. Right? So I was looking at some of the titles, and the one that really caught my eye had to do with a billionaire werewolf. And I'm like, Alpha's Temptation. Alpha. Okay. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'll pull it up. Guys, check out some of her books. Okay. I'm a storyteller at heart. I just love the hero's journey. I don't think in these books you're really referencing the hero's journey, but there is a common theme. And it seems like a woman taming a beast. And a beast that's pretty much free to do whatever he wants when he wants. Is that the common theme? And why is that the fantasy of many women?
So yes, that is absolutely the common theme. You nailed it. And I think it does. It has to do with that. Like part of the fantasy is like love conquers all, right? So you have the beast. He's either the mafia, you know, who doesn't abide the laws, or he's the werewolf who doesn't have to abide by human culture, or, you know, but he's going to be bigger, stronger, more powerful. And then it is love that, you know, brings him to his knees ultimately. And by the end, he is always on his knees for her. And so there's that sort of like taking something that might be scary, right? Like, you know, and I had read a lot of abduction seduction. So it's like, oh, the mafia guy kidnaps her, but, and then it's, she, you know, they all fall in love. So it's like taking something that, of course, you would not want to experience in real life. Like that's terrifying and wouldn't end in true love. And then you're making it, you know, you're exploring it in a way that's kind of delicious. So it's similar to like people who love to read murder mysteries. Like, of course, you don't want to have a murder in real life. But there's a, you know, it's like facing a fear. It's a human fear of this murder or this, you know, and so facing it and, you know, triumphing over it kind of.
And so what I've realized as I age, I'm 39 years old. I guess you could say pleasure really is psychological for women. And for men, it's very visual, right? So maybe these stories do something to the brain whenever it releases Absolutely. Dopamine. Have you done research into psychology, how people think, what turns them on? Or is this just coming from your own intuition, your own gut instincts, putting it out there? If it excites me, it excites someone else. So I'm just a psychological maniac. I just love understanding how people think. Have you done that type of research?
I am not. I am mostly just like following my own, but there are people in our space. Theodora Taylor is one who like teaches authors to look for the universal fantasy in like popular TV shows so that they get, because if, when you're clear on what it is, you know how to market it. And when you market it right, that's when people go crazy buying your book. So, you know, you may think like, oh, this book is about an art thief, but no, like it's the mafia revenge element is the one that gets, you know, people don't really care about art thief. Like art thief is interesting, but like, oh, the, you know, she stole it because my friend is actually writing that book right now. That's why it was in my head, you know, because, you know, they're enemies, childhood friends that have turned to enemies and she's stealing back her property. And, you know, that's exciting. Hmm. And he's the mafia there, guy now.
If somebody's out there listening to this podcast or watching it, what are some tips in regards to storytelling that you would convey to them right out of the gate?
I think that you find the nugget that's like most compelling to you and then just amp it up. And I think that judgment, like when you start doubting yourself or questioning like, oh, is this it? Is that it? Like, what would an editor think? What would a reader think? You get off track. So like stick to what lights you up, what you love about the story, what you love about the book, and you won't go wrong.
Hmm.
So I think judgment destroys your creation and like being in appreciation and love for your book is what opens the doors up and lets you find the right story. The times I wrote a book thinking like for an editor or for an agent were the most like constipated writing, you know, just the least favorite experiences. Where I just was doubting every word I wrote was like, would they like this? Would, you know, that instead of following my own heart.
Is there a formula that you're sticking to every step of the way in addition to what we talked about earlier? The reason why I bring that up is every big story out there, whether it's Back to the Future, whether it's Rocky or, you know, The Count of Monte Cristo, there's a certain flow of a call to adventure, a refusal of the call, which is the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And so there's a certain pattern to it. And the reason why is because we see transformation more than anything else. And therefore we put ourselves in the hero's shoes and see how this movie, we wish we were this person because we secretly want to transform. And this movie does it, or this book does it within a few short hours. With us, it maybe takes years. So that's the formula. Is there anything like that that you have found to be like a secret weapon?
For sure. There's romance beats, you know, just like the beats of a story. If you don't follow those beats, people might not know what's wrong with it, but they will not be satisfied. And I, like, once I learned the beats, anytime I'd watch a show on TV that fell flat, I could tell you exactly where it, because it didn't follow the beats.
Tell us about the beats. I don't know anything about this. This might
like, have you seen the first Dune? Like my ex was just saying, like, why didn't people like the first Dune? Have you like?
No.
We could. Oh, okay.
Dune.
Sorry.
Is that a show or a movie or?
Yeah, Dune 2 just came out last weekend.
Oh, okay. Don't.
The first one, it's like 3 hours long, and it I guess because they were going to take a 6-hour movie, they just cut it in half. So it doesn't have, like you said.
Oh, gotcha.
Right. It just sort of ends with like.
The arc is not there or whatever it is, right?
So does it's a beautiful film, beautifully acted, great story. Totally falls flat because of where they cut it with the beats. Like it just does not satisfy you.
And you're when you
it
say
doesn't
beats,
take you on that journey.
Are you talking about pitfalls and inclines and wins and losses and allies and dragons, basically? Is that what you mean by
yeah,
beats?
Like the story beats. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So the romance beats, love is the antagonist. So it's you have two main characters. And they're each pitted against love, right? So they're each resisting love.
Okay, got it. All
right. And then you know they fall flat when they refuse love, and then by the end, they finally accept it. And then you know, so you always have like there's a meet cute. You know, that's the like you bump into him in the elevator, whatever it is. You spill coffee on your new boss. The guy you hooked up with last night ends up being your new boss. Like that's the meet cute, right? It's this scenario with the like, and then there's the glue that sticks them together. Oh, you're stuck in the cabin in the snowy, in the snowstorm together, or you're at work, you have to work on this project with the guy. So there's like some glue, like the inciting incident that'll force them together. And then they each have their like refusal of like, there's an attraction and they each have the like, this is why I can't. And they have some wound that they have to work through. Like, I can't because my last guy cheated on me. I can't because women suck, whatever, you know, like, and then, so then they'll get closer, pull apart, get closer, pull apart, false high. You think everything's going to work out for them. This is like any movie, right? False high. And then the bottom drops out, right? They break up, black moment. And then someone has to make a grand gesture. It's the, you know, the big, and then they, happily ever after, right?
Got it. Right. It's I like how you say that it's the false. Would you call it the false high? False high.
Yeah.
Right. There's these moments of like it's not I used to think that love at first sight, everybody meets each other and that's how it's supposed to be. Boom. Well, it doesn't work that way. And there's probably a reason for it. But there's like there's a dance that has to happen. And it's not all at once. And
yeah, we got to work like you're not satisfied if they don't have to work to get there.
Right. If it's too fast, too easy. You don't value it. And maybe that's what's happening. The attraction has to build. And therefore, yeah. I mean, I think if I would have read these fiction books back in when I was 14 years old, just to understand what turns women on, I would have been way better off. But, you know, guys don't think of it because they're like, what? That has nothing to do with me. Absolutely. It has to do with how they think and what turns them on. So if you understand great storytelling, it might make you a better leader, better person, better spouse, better boyfriend, whatever, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I know what, like, when my ex and I were breaking up, I was like waiting for the grand gesture. You know, I was like, you know, in a romance novel, he would, you know, say he was sorry with a grand gesture. And of course, it didn't happen because real life, it doesn't work that way. But it's satisfying when it does. You know, it's like if it does follow those pieces.
So that's a question I wanted to ask, and then you opened up the door for it. But your personal life, when you are dating guys, are they thinking, man, do I have really difficult, you know, things ahead of me because I can't match up to what's going on in your brain? I'm not a werewolf billionaire. Like, is it intimidating to guys? Have you noticed that? And I guess maybe it makes it even easier for guys because maybe they can get a glimpse into your soul if you write so much.
I don't know if it intimidates. I mean, I definitely like when I first started dating, I was like, don't worry. Like, I don't expect, you know, it's like, I know that I'm writing fantasy, right? Like, I do feel like I have to warn guys that I'm not, I understand reality and fiction.
It's fantasy for a
reason.
I'm not
delusional, you know, like I do understand. Yeah.
So, but it's probably, I mean, I would love to know what, if anybody I'm dating is thinking at all times. And it sounds like that's what's happening with a writer that writes these type of books. I mean, I think it's just fascinating that you really do take your deepest thoughts and make them real for not only yourself, but for others.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see like, you know, as I grow and change the books, the characters are different. They're more, you know, they're more developed. They're less, you know, maybe the women are getting stronger. The heroines are getting feistier because I'm developing my own, you know, as a person myself.
Yeah. So Have you noticed a certain target audience really pick up on it? Maybe it depends on the book, but or maybe, you know, your evolution. Have you noticed that it's maybe 20-year-old women or 40-year-old women or 60-year-old women? Any type of common ground that you're noticing?
It is most of my readers are the older, like the 50 and up.
Wow.
Or 45 and up, which is interesting. So of course I'm trying, I'm hoping to get younger ones by putting my books in places like, on TikTok or in Vella, on that reading apps where there's younger readers, just hoping to like broaden that.
So what are the numbers that you can share with us of how many copies you've sold or how much has been produced on the back end or front end of sales?
I have like completely lost track. I know, a few years ago I did the math and it was like over 2 million copies sold total, just on Amazon, and I'm everywhere. So that's maybe only half of my business. Sorry. I don't know my.
Wow. That's amazing. So from what I gather, 78% of all books sold in the world are purchased on Amazon, somewhere in there, maybe. Maybe it's just the United States, but where else are people picking it up? Is it just through Apple?
Yeah, I'm less than 50% now with Amazon, which is cool. I am selling direct, which matches my Amazon. Like I sell about the same on Amazon as I do in my store. And then next biggest is Kobo and then Apple. So I have a lot of Kobo readers.
Jeez.
Which might have to do, I actually have a lot of French readers, and so they buy on Kobo. So some of that might have to do with the French. And then Barnes & Noble and Google Books. And then there's a lot of like smaller, foreign ones. And then that reading apps. That's mostly it. Yeah.
Probably.
Audible Books.
Yeah. So audiobooks. Do you have Audible books in your voice? Are you reading it or do you have AI doing it or anything like that?
I have hired, I like to do male, female narration, but I did my own for Right to Riches because I felt like it should be in my voice since it was my advice. And after that, like I went home and I went to like a sound booth. I had someone produce it for me because I was like, I don't know this stuff. And I came home and I like immediately emailed my narrator and I was like, this is really hard. Do you need a raise? I'm like, what you do is insanely hard.
It is. Reading it is actually to me harder than writing it. It's crazy how
it was exhausting
for me to read my own book. But now we have AI and that's you can have it read in your voice pretty damn spot on. I don't know if you could do it with your type of books, but for us with nonfiction, personal development, it's all one voice, pretty much the same pattern all the way through. But with men and women and multiple characters, could be very, very difficult.
Wow, I didn't know how, like you load your voice in or how do you
do
that?
Yeah, use a program called 11 Labs. 11 Labs, you can find even voices that are, they sound like your neighbors. It's unbelievable. But with your voice, 11labs.com, there's a few others, but that's the best one so far. You upload your voice, 3-minute clip, maybe 90 seconds in every tonality, and it'll print out. It's gonna come out to be pretty much spot on. Spot on.
I have to try this. This is so fascinating.
Yes, you will love it. You'll never read your own book ever again. I will tell you that. The hard part is still when you go through it, there may be a word or something that it doesn't come out right. So you have to go in there and fix it and then change it a little bit. So a couple adjustments, but oh my God, it'll save you hours, maybe weeks, maybe months worth of time.
Amazing. I want to check it out.
11 Labs. Remember that. Guys, check that out too. When you release a book though, what does that process look like? We have a certain process when we launch a book. They're all personal development, nonfiction. We do a big push to get the bestseller logo and all that. What does yours look like?
Yes. And I have questions for you about yours. I've been watching some of your launches. I just launched last week. I have a publicist. So she got it out, she got advanced copies out to like the book talkers. We call them book talkers, the TikTokers on about books. And we did like, so they'll post thing like they'll post all over Instagram and TikTok on the day of release with their reviews. And then we did an ad spend on Facebook to push it. We did newsletters and I feel like I'm forgetting things. Let's see. What else did we do? So we did used to, we possibly, I so yeah, so these are my questions about, I'm wondering if, are you still going for USA Today list? What have you tried since it changed? No, it's not possible anymore. It's different.
I mean, I think it might be possible. It's just not worth it. The accolade bestseller to us is so prestigious in the eyes of the masses that we're just trying to increase the author's credibility in the marketplace so that individual is able to attract opportunities much easier. And so Amazon's very, I don't know, you could say if it's, it has changed over time. It used to be really easy. Now it's getting a little harder. But to become a bestseller on that doesn't take an insane amount of resources. So the other stuff I could pay, but it's not worth it. The return on investment's not there.
Yeah. That's what, because I feel like we could have possibly, and I maybe should have checked yesterday, could have possibly hit USA Today list if it was still not curated. But now that it's curated, I don't even know. We weren't trying this time because we didn't think it was worth it, like you said. But I should check just to see if they're on the off chance we made it. But
it might be in your world. So ours, like we write nonfiction personal development books because we're not really caring about book sales after day one. We're trying to generate leads. So having funnels in place, like Right to Riches, imagine having a coaching program, a course, t-shirts regarding it, right? The moment you get data on anybody who's interested in writing to riches, you can now create workshops, which maybe people pay $5,000 for. So you would make way more money on the back end than the front end. And it's way less work in our opinion. So that's what we do. So after day two, we actually say, build a website, build a funnel, focus on that. Don't even try to even get sales on Amazon. You want them to your website because the data, oh my God, 5 years from now, you'll have a tribe of people willing to come to your events, buy your t-shirts, buy your services directly.
Yep. So, and it looked to me like you were pushing the paperbacks over the eBooks. And I was curious about, is it easier to hit the bestseller list?
Yes. Time-wise, Kindle was the best for years. They did a change in the past 6 months. And Kindle was very much delayed on in the counting. And they probably figured out, oh, everybody was just doing the 99-cent Kindle book. All right, we got to incentivize paperbacks because they make more money that way through the printing and the royalties. So why don't we push the paperbacks, number one, for the sales rank to update faster, but also it seems like there's a major delay on the back end of the count. So you don't even know how many you're selling. However, if you buy a book right now, within 3 hours, it'll probably update on the front end of Amazon's bestseller list. So paperback has been sped up. Kindle has been delayed. It's really weird how that happens in Amazon.
And then were you having those? I'm just sorry. Just so I was so curious. Were you having those printed by Amazon, those paperbacks?
Yep. Okay. So through kdp.amazon.com.
Yeah. And then so just for one day, you push it at that low price.
Yes. And then day two, you raise it and you're probably familiar with this, but when you raise prices, you can't just go from $5 to $20. You have to do a stepping up process. And so you go from $5 to $7 to $9 to $14 to $20 over the next few days.
Wait, no, I didn't know that. Why is that?
I have no idea why, but you can't just have these.
Oh, Amazon won't let you.
Yeah. Amazon has these limitations on going from $5 to like $50 for a book.
Okay.
So over the next 2 or 3 days, it'll eventually hit that full price, which is either $15 or $20, what we shoot for.
Fascinating. Thank you for sharing. I just was really curious.
Oh, that's, and by the way, it's great because you have the Kindle, the paperback, the hardcover, and the audiobook on Amazon. Most people, if they're kind of just like, who is this person? Or is this person legit? They're going to go to Amazon. But if you are on social media and you're posting constantly and every day or every week you start to say, hey, go to my website, get a free copy of my book or get it for a discounted price, there's an incentive to go to your website. And then it's just one way to get them on your email list and then maybe your phone, their phone number. And then all of a sudden, maybe as a guest on a podcast and maybe a consultation. So like you start to create relationships rather than just readers. And I don't know, fiction books different, but nonfiction, most people will not read the book from cover to cover. I think the number is like 95% of all books are not read cover to cover, but they will make a decision if they're going to do business with you or follow you online after about 2 or 3 chapters. So you just want them to read or listen to 3 chapters and either they're going to make a decision, yes, to do business with you or deselect you out of their life.
Fascinating. Awesome. I love that.
Yeah. So that's how we look at it. And I mean, it's great. Now you have a whole different perspective on writing and marketing. So that's why I'm blown away with what you're doing. How often are you writing throughout your day? What's your schedule look like? Your process of sitting down and getting your thoughts down on a piece of paper? Is it every day? Is it once a week? What is it now?
It is every morning. Like, so I sort of have the rule that like before noon, I'm not allowed to do anything else, because of course, you know, you want to just like sit and answer emails and do the easy stuff first, but that's, and then you don't get to the writing. So I just like sit down and try to get my writing done. And then, you know, sometimes I'm writing multiple books at a time, like right now I'm writing 3 books at a time. And so like Fridays are for the nonfiction book, because I have a coach for the nonfiction book, because nonfiction is different for me. And so like I need a chapter to show her. So that gives me a deadline. Otherwise I would put that one off, because that's not, for me, that's not where the money's been.
Wow.
The money's in the romance, but the nonfiction's where my heart is for sure. So.
You mean the nonfiction is where your heart's at?
Yeah. Like to be able to share.
Okay. I was thinking it's the opposite. Really sounds
it's
like
bold,
heart,
you know, it is. I love the romance. I absolutely love the romance. I think I'll probably always write romance. But it feels more life purpose like to share my, you know, my thoughts on to support other authors, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. So it's the hero's journey stage 3, where it's the giving back aspect, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. There is that common theme, though. And guys, if you're out there, all of these beasts inside these books are not the nice guys, right? They're the ones who are strong and powerful.
It's the anti-hero for sure. Yeah.
Right? And there's a Jordan Peterson fan or a quote out there. Are you a Jordan Peterson fan?
I haven't read him.
Okay. Jordan Peterson says, you know, you don't want to be a nice man. A nice man is a weak man. You want to be a good man. And a good man is not a nice man. It's actually a guy who has embraced his shadow as a very dark side, but chooses to be good, right? So you have strong presence. You have force. You have this ability to be a monster. And so the whole goal is, and this does tie in with the books that you write, to be a monster on the inside. And when it's required, to let the monster be known to the world. So it seems like
oh, that's hot.
Yeah, right. And so you were raised, and I guess I was born in 1984, and there's a lot of movies that are all about the nice guy. The real nice guy eventually gets the girl. Well, that's not the case.
I hated those movies.
Right? I watched that. I believed that crap. You know, I was listening to Bon Jovi. I'm thinking, oh, all I got to do is sing these romance songs. That's it. That's all you got to do. Doesn't work. But once you start to embrace the shadow, are you a Carl Jung fan at all?
Yeah.
Carl Jung, right? Ground Zero moments and embracing your shadow. Shadow. This is exactly what you preach, I guess, in these books, that every person has a shadow self. And only when you confront your shadow self, you're able to become free, because you actually embrace all the dark, maybe scary things that society tried to push out of you.
Right. Which was a lot of what I talk about, because a lot of us, you know, mass consciousness around money and wealth and abundance is like mean people are evil. You know, it's always Scrooge. It's the, you know, it's psycho billionaire. Like, and so you think you want success and abundance from your book, but you actually, because you also, your subconscious thinks that mean people are horrible, you're resisting it. You're not making the choices or actions that would get you to the 7 figures, because there's a resistance in there, you know, within your, you know, your shadow self.
Yeah. And so you talked about comparisonitis and maybe imposter syndrome, but the people who are out there on the fence who don't write, what have you noticed amongst them? Is there anything in their past? Is there something that happened to them that maybe gave them these voices in their head that said, you're not ready. It's not good enough. It'll never be good enough. Who's going to read it? What is it? And how do you help them overcome that?
Yeah, I think that resistance is like just lifting off that judgment. And usually everyone I've worked with has already written the first book, you know? And so what I always say is, because they have all this doubt, and I'm like, look, you wrote a book. Like, you know how many people want to write a book and never do? Like, you are a success already. Like, you wrote a book, you are a success. And so it's like really just appreciating that. And then from there, it's like you know, because then you're comparing yourself like, oh, well, she makes seven figures and I don't. So I suck. Like, that's not like, it's really celebrating your own wins. So if you're writing a book, it'd be like, I wrote 1,000 words today. I'm a writer. Like, just like, not like, I'm not a writer. I haven't published yet. Like, that sort of like contraction, but we want to be in the sense of expansion, right? Celebrating what we're doing. And that brings in, I hate when people, like, it kind of gets oversimplified, but they're like, just feel grateful. But that does bring up that natural gratitude of like, I'm living the dream. I'm writing a book, you know, that sort of.
You own the identity that you are an author, right?
Yes.
Even though the book is not on Amazon to buy yet, but having the identity probably reassures some type of habit that you sit down and
yes.
write, because why? I'm a writer. That's what writers
yes.
do.
Exactly.
Hmm. Very nice.
Yeah. So it's that sort of like being the energy of it now, not like not going, someday I'll be a writer. When I publish this book, I'll be a writer. But it's like right now, today. So even like, let's say you're a writer, but you're not a seven-figure author. You'll just like have that, like, I'm a seven-figure author, even though it's not true yet. Like, you, and then you like think, well, what would a seven-figure author do? Okay, they would sit down and get their words in today instead of, you know, whatever we do when we're screwing around, which is me, like, all the time. But, you know, embracing that.
So how do people learn the beats of storytelling? Is there any guide or anything that you could share with our audience or people
Absolutely.
Out there looking to write a book that maybe could help them understand maybe the
yeah.
flow of great storytelling?
So Save the Cat, I think it's called, are the like movie beats. Like, you can, if you, once you know those beats, when you watch a movie, you'll see them in every single movie. And then you'll know, if it falls flat, you'll know that's why.
Save the Cat.
Save the Cat.
Okay.
I think it's like a cat. He uses an example of like a cat up a tree, I think, or something. And then for romance, it's romancing the beats. I don't know if it's beats plural or one beat, romancing the beat or beats. So she like broke it down for, because it's a little, you know, when you're thinking of two characters, it gets confusing trying to follow the Save the Cat, but it's basically Save the Cat applied to romance. So it's, and it'll tell you like where in the book these things need to fall. So sometimes it's like they have all the beats, but they're not timed right. Like there's not enough, after, like the black moment came too soon or too late. Right. So you want to have it at the right places in the book too. So that's why they're the beats, like the beat that falls high needs to be, you know, the 2/3 of the way through, so that the bottom can drop out, you know, we can have the black moment, you know, that sort of thing. Like the, so knowing where those fall.
Romancing
useful.
The beat or beats and
yep.
Save the Cat. Those are two that I'm going to check out because I find this extremely fascinating. When it comes to writing in general, what has it done for you? Me personally, it's given me self-awareness, clarity, the ability to communicate at a higher level. Also, it spiked my curiosity. The more I learn, the more I could teach. So it's done wonders for me. What has it done for you internally or externally?
All of those things. But, you know, the last thing you said, like the writing the nonfiction really gave me clarity. Because you learn as you're, like, while you're teaching, you learn, right? And so, and you have to embody the lessons that you're putting into the book. And so, like, my big growth came with Write to Riches. And right now I'm writing the follow-up, which is Relax to Riches, which is sort of like 2.0. And so, and it's, you know, I'm learning as I go. Like, as I'm uncovering these ideas of doing less, inviting in more, you know, like, and I'm using dream time. So part of the Relax to Riches is like, usually it's a third of our lives, right, are spent sleeping. And so what can we do? Like, you can lucid dream. You can ask for answers about your book before you go to sleep. You could put on, you know, something to play at night that's like reinforcing your subconscious, like playing with that shadow self during, you know, like using that wasted time of sleeping to get to success, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. When you talk about, you said your woo-woo side, I mean, I find it fascinating because I, you know, in our world, we talk about like NLP, people call that the woo-woo side, but it's just really taking control of your mind and realizing that you can manifest whatever the hell you want. And you can become your highest and best self, right? You can become more every day. And whether
yeah.
you realize it or not, you are transforming if you have your mindset set somewhere else. You have to have that destination. So,
right. Setting a clear intention. Absolutely.
A clear intention. So if there's anything that you can convey to our audience, How can someone start to do that? Is it identifying who you want to become 5 years from now? Because that's what I teach to people. And then break that person down into, how does that person dress? How does that person walk? How do they speak? Exactly. How do they make their money? What's their perfect schedule look like? And now you have a roadmap. And without a target, what the hell are you going to hit in this world? And are you familiar with where the origin of the word sin came from?
No.
So it was the original word for sinning was in reference to missing the mark in archery. So when you sin, that means you didn't hit the bullseye. How crazy is that? The first time it was ever used. So you sin when you miss the mark, when you don't hit a target, which means if you have no target, you're automatically going to sin. And now it raised the question, do you get punished for, or do you get punished by your sins or for missing the mark, right? Every time you miss the mark, every time you lie, you cheat, you do something that goes against your soul, you actually get punished by it, right? You lose friends, you do something rotten, whatever. And so it's really cool how to point it in that direction. Anyways, without a target, without a goal, you're automatically going to feel the repercussions of it. So having that dream version in front of you changes everything. Is that what you teach?
100%. So that, like, you just, that was like two of my steps. The, in Right to Riches, it's the 7 steps to abundance. So step two is feed the fire, where you just get really clear. You make your, here, make your dream board.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Nice. You know, and then live it now. So step five, like you said, so then now you've got your roadmap. So you're living it as if you're embodying the energy of the thing that you're asking for right now. You can have the energy of it, even if you don't have the physical manifestation. And then, like you say, then you're going to make different choices. So like when you're living as your millionaire author self, you're going to invest in good editor. You're going to invest in a good cover. You're not going to go, I'm just a hobby. I'm not published yet. I'm not, like, no, if you're thinking like, I'm a millionaire author, how does a millionaire author think? Right. Then that's, you're going to make the right choices for your book.
Ooh. So it's basically acting as if, right? It's treating yourself as if you're already there, which is a state of abundance. Yes. I already have what I, and that's why you can give more. I already have everything. I'm good. It'll come to me. Yeah. I'll make more, right?
You're not in that lack mentality of like, oh, no one will read my book. I don't know if I can get it published. Like, none of that. Like, you're just in like, millions of people are going to love this book. And it may not be that book, but like, you believing that is going to get you to the book that where millions, like, you will get there. Like, that first book, I was like, I want what 50 Shades of Grey has. And I'm like, okay, it wasn't that book, but you know, like, and I'm not at 99 million yet, but I'll have it. I'll have that too.
But 150, think about that, guys. I mean, individuals think they're going to be a success right out of the gate. And whoever wrote, what's her name that wrote Harry Potter? Well, she was rejected, I think, what is it, 20 times or something, maybe more than that. But if people think that they're going to be a success out of the gate by writing, right? You create this new identity, but you start to get very good at it. And
yeah, you're in the flow. You get in the energy of author, right? Yes. And then you figure out. So this was my thing. Like, I, like, my next thing on my board is I would love to have my A book, some books on film, like on TV or film. And so that's not going to happen like, you know, hoping and wishing, right? So there's like, okay, you just start to take steps, and it may not be, like, they may not each pan out, but you're getting in the energy flow of it. And then something's going to, like, either I'm going to start writing differently. Like, maybe I used to say, well, I don't know if I've written the book yet. That may be true, but me believing that and not taking steps as if I was worthy of having it, I'm never going to get there. So I need to start trying, and then I'll get the feedback of like, oh, you need these, like, more action in your books. And so I'll start writing more action in my, you know, like, it's like, once you get in the flow of it, then you iterate until you get there. Right. But if you don't ever, like, step into the flow, you're not going to find it's like surfing, right? You're not going to get the wave. You got to get in the water to get on to get the wave, you know?
Yeah. You basically, in the origin of the word character, have you ever heard of this at all?
No.
But it basically means you get chiseled out of something that happens around you. So society or the environment, you get chiseled into this person, and that's how they got the, the original term for character means being chiseled out of stone, I think. And so if you have character, that means you get chiseled into this person. So it's not like you're perfect as is, this perfect writer. As you move forward, obviously physics, you know, starts to play in your favor, and an object in motion stays in motion. But all of these things start happening. You have new ideas. People come to you with ideas. You start paying attention and you become chiseled into this writer that really yeah. does impact and motivate and excite the world, right? So you have to create movement to be chiseled into the dream version, the million-dollar author, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Like I used, you know, when I first started writing, I was really writing just like short, kinky books. And I was like, I'm learning to, you know, I'm making money as I learn to write, you know, like, cause you know, cause I, the shame part of me wanted to be like, this isn't real, right? You know, the creative writing major, my professors would not have been proud of what I was writing maybe, you know? So like the shameful part is like, oh, this isn't real. This isn't good. You know, this isn't the great American novel you were born to write. But that has taught, like, I may write the great American novel, or I may just keep writing hot sex because I like that too. But you know, I was learning with every book I wrote, right? I was in the space of it. I was growing.
Yeah, because then you're
making money.
And you're seeing success, but testimonials, people coming out of the woodwork saying, "Really, I really love this part of it. Oh my God, that was great." So you're like, "Oh, I see what's working, right? I see what's landing and resonating. I like that."
Yeah, absolutely.
So outside of your own books, last question I have for you, outside of your own books, actually, I got one more after this, but is there a book that stands out in your life that maybe got you to fall in love with reading or writing or anything that maybe was a defining moment in your life?
I mean, I grew up just like devouring books. I think most writers did. I do actually really love... It's funny because I don't write it, so maybe someday I will. Like fantasy books. Like I loved like the Merlin books, like Mary Stewart's Crystal Cave and those kind of things, like the sort of magical books were really impacted me somehow, which maybe speaks to my woo-woo side. Like I, you know, like to believe there's some magic out there.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely seem like a Dr. Joe Dispenza fan, just so you know.
Are totally, you a Joe Dispenza? Absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. Of course. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. Last question. So, I would say, I mean, I used to think that it was mostly guys that listen to this podcast. Now it's about 50-50, it seems like. So when it comes to just attraction in general, from what I'm gathering from these type of books, the buildup is just as important as everything else that we think is important to women or to men. So absolutely. Is there any other little takeaway or nugget that you could provide to us when it comes to what really, really creates a lot of dopamine in women or men?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There is like, there's like the 12 stages of attraction or seduction that like is in all mammals, and it's the different touches. So there's like hand to hand. So like, if you skip these, it feels like they jumped.
Yes.
Like there wasn't an attraction, like they jumped too fast. So, and not that they, like some people do have sex first and then they build this intimacy with the hand touching, you know, which is fine, whatever, however you tell your story. But knowing that there's like these 12, so it's like hand to hip, hand to touch, eye to eye, like all of these, and all mammals have these when they're mating.
Wow.
Yeah. And so like, just learning that, like, so just like the, you know, the hero, just like lightly the hand on the back, that you just got one, you know, holds her hand. You got one there. Like, did they lock eyes? There's one. You know, then of course there's mouth to skin, mouth to mouth, like all of the, you know, like before the actual mating are all like really important stages of intimacy in terms of showing seduction.
Ooh, I saw a girl who's very attractive on Instagram who I'm, you know, sort of friends with. And she made a post about like, there was a screenshot and it was a guy asking her, "Hey, what are you doing tomorrow?" And she's like, "Nothing. Why?" And she's like, "I'm going to come pick you up. We're going to spend the day together." And she's like, "Yes." And so like thousands and thousands and thousands of women were like, "Where are men to do this? Why can't they do this?" Like, it's like this take charge mentality that just really excites these women that you'd think that you think it's common, but it's not. It's so crazy.
I mean, that fantasy is like, you have your busy day. You make decisions all day. It'd be so great for someone to show up and like make the decisions. Right. To just be able to surrender and have, you know, like have someone go like, "I'm going to, you know, It's hot. It's super hot. Yeah, that's.
Hey, yeah. I think you got to come back on again. We could talk for hours and hours about writing, publishing, attraction marketing, fiction, all this stuff. So
absolutely,
I really appreciate your time, guys. It's very easy to find Renee Rose on Google or Amazon. Is there a website or anything that you want to promote?
There's two. So there's ReneeRoseRomance.com is the romance, and then Right to Riches, but it's a numeral two. So, and it's Right with a W. So like writing.
Yeah.
numeral2riches.com.
Yeah. Check that out, guys. Right to Riches. Now, you know, writing obviously does wonders for you. And it does wonders to your bank account too, if you do it right. So Renee Rose, this has been an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.